DW Africa Link.
Indeed, this is Africa Link program, and of course, we are live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Jane Nyingi.
And I am Mimi Mefo. A warm welcome to Africa Link, coming live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. You can be part of the debate on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Coming up, Cameroonian President Paul Biya to address the nation anytime from now in a very rare speech. But what are people's expectations?
Many people will expect the president to give a definitive calendar about the inclusive dialogue that many people have been calling. Many people expect the president to end the war that has been going on in the Northwest and the Southwest region.
Rwanda agrees to take in African migrants stuck in Libya. Would it be a voluntary repatriation?
We're talking about 500 in the coming week. If some of the refugees want to return home, they can do that if they wish to on a voluntary basis from Rwanda.
Those are some of the stories that we've been working on, but first, the news in brief.
DW News.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. Rwanda agreed on Tuesday to take in hundreds of African refugees and asylum seekers stranded in Libya. Babar Baloh, a spokesman for the United Nations Office of the High Commissioner for Refugees, UNHCR, announced.
First group of 500. So this is not the total number. This is the first group of 500 which will be evacuated out of Libya to Rwanda. And in terms of some of the nationalities, I understand this includes refugees from Eritrea, Somalia, and Sudan.
So far, no details have emerged about the deal signed between Kigali, the UNHCR, and the African Union. The Rwandan government is said to be prepared to take in as many as 30,000 Africans. A similar deal already exists between the European Union and Niger. It aims at processing asylum requests on African soil and stop migrants from coming to Europe. Nigerian police on Tuesday fired on members of a banned Shiite group staging religious processions, killing six people, the Islamic Movement of Nigeria, IMN, said. The pro-Iranian group defied a police ban to hold its annual Ashura religious procession, leading to a violent crackdown in several cities. Nigeria's military has arbitrarily detained thousands of children for suspected involvement with the Islamist terrorist group Boko Haram, the non-governmental organization Human Rights Watch said on Tuesday. Many children are held without charge for months or years in squalid and severely overcrowded military barracks in what HRW described as inhuman conditions. This news is brought to you by DW in Bonn. China reacted with anger to a meeting between German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas and Hong Kong activist and government critic Joshua Wong, calling it disrespectful. Wong travelled to Germany after being released from police custody in Hong Kong, where government opponents have been demonstrating for months against China's growing influence. Joshua Wong told DW that only political reforms will stop the protests.
The leader of Hong Kong is not elected by Hong Kong people. The chief executive is just a puppet of communist authorities. And we hope the leader of Hong Kong can be the one getting mandate from people and let Hong Kong, such a global city, enjoy stability and prosperity.
The new European Commission led by Ursula von der Leyen, which will take office in 2 months, will boost its fight against climate change. The top portfolio is to be handled by Dutchman and veteran Brussels official Frans Timmermans. Von der Leyen made cutting carbon emissions a key priority of her executive for the next 5 years. Besides von der Leyen, the new commission consists of 13 women and 14 men, making it the most gender-balanced in the EU's history. At least 31 people died in Iraq and another 100 were wounded on Tuesday in a stampede during the Shiite Muslim religious rituals of Ashura in the city of Karbala, according to authorities. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Christina Kripal.
Thanks so much for sticking with us. My name is Jane Nyinge, and this is Africa Link program.
And I am Mimi Mefo. We are live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. I can see you. Prayers, amen. That is the name on Facebook. And as well, Muna Emmanuel. Keep the debate flowing. We take off in Cameroon, where emotions are high as citizens await a presidential address to the nation. His speech comes at a time when Anglophone crisis has stunned the country for close to 3 years now.
Just before coming on air, I spoke to a correspondent based in Bamenda, Jean-Marie Ngongsong, and I wanted to know why this speech by President Paul Biya is unusual.
This speech is very, very unusual because President Paul Biya, traditionally for more than 30 years that he has been in power, he has been addressing Cameroonians only twice a year. He addresses the Cameroonian youth every year on the 11th of February and on the 31st of December every year.
And how is the mood like in the country as people await the president's speech?
Many people will expect the president tonight to give a definitive calendar on what he intends to do about the inclusive dialogue that many people have been calling. Many people expect the president to end the war that has been going on in the Northwest and the Southwest region. Many people are expecting the president to handle the refugee crisis that has pushed many Cameroonians, especially English Cameroonians, to take up residence in Nigeria.
Building on what you've already said, it's been 3 years since the conflict began, and the international community has been quite hesitant in taking concrete step towards addressing the crisis. Could they be indirectly pushing President Biya to take action this time round?
Just to maybe point out here that today's address to the nation comes at a time when the 42nd Human Rights Council of the United Nations will be opening in Switzerland, and it's also coming at a time in 1 week the UN General Assembly will be converging. These are certainly pointers to show that the international pressure has weighed down heavily on the president.
Now, of course, a lot of issues to be addressed by the president there, but can he be trusted to fulfill what he will say today?
I think that there's always an opportunity, given that he has been there for long. Many people will still want to have a chance. Cameroonians have been listening to him for years. Even if they don't trust him, they want to give him another chance to listen to what he will have to say.
Jean-Marie Ngongsong there, our correspondent in Bamenda. And Mimi, a lot of reaction coming from Cameroon.
For instance, Ben Bess says that I expect him to release all those who have been arrested in connection to the Anglophone crisis, call for an inclusive dialogue. He equally adds that it should be followed by constitutional amendments.
If you are in Cameroon, tell us, what else do you expect to hear from the president today?
Now, from the capital city, Yaoundé, we saw the views of some of the residents on what their expectations are when President Paul Biya makes the unusual national state address, which is expected later today.
He has proven to us that he can be very, very unpredictable. 2008, when there were hunger strikes in Cameroon, everybody thought he was going to come and say something soft. Rather, he came and declared them apprentice sorcier.
What I might be expecting from the president tonight is he talking to his people like he cares, like he really wants this nation to grow stronger. I feel that it is time to dialogue, it is time to make peace. Let's come to the table. Cameroonians are in pain, they're in agony.
One is expecting a policy statement of appeasement and a relaxation of tension. Given that the Northwest and Southwest regions, let alone the Far North region, had undergone turbulence, which the head of state should not ignore in his address.
Now, hundreds of African refugees trapped in Libyan detention centers will be evacuated in Rwanda as part of increasingly urgent efforts to relocate people as conflict rages in the North African nation. Libya has become the main route for Africans fleeing war and poverty trying to reach Europe.
The first group of 500 refugees will be evacuated in coming weeks under a new transit mechanism partly funded by the European Union. But will the repatriation process be voluntarily? A question I posed to the UNHCR spokesperson, Babak Balok.
Individuals who we have rescued from these detention centers, refugees and asylum seekers, if they are willing to be evacuated to Rwanda, they will be supported. Currently, in Tripoli, UNHCR has a center where we have more than 1,000 refugees and asylum seekers. And the priority is, depending on the situation in Libya and in Tripoli, we want get people out of the harm's way as soon as possible.
Once they arrive in Rwanda, what's the plan? Because all of them are headed to Europe.
In Rwanda, there is a center where these refugees and asylum seekers will be looked after. We're talking about 500 in the coming week. Refugees in Rwanda will have the right to safe refuge. They will have right to access medical care, school and work.
If the plan is to resettle them in Europe, how long will they stay in Rwanda? Because nothing much is known about the program.
If some of the refugees want to return home, they can do that if they wish to on a voluntary basis from Rwanda. Or if some of them wants to stay in Rwanda, that's a possibility as well. From Niger, since 2017, we have evacuated more than 3,000 refugees and asylum seekers from Libya to Niger. More than 2,000 of those have been resettled to many countries, Canada, US, including some countries in Europe as well.
That is a UNHCR spokesperson, Babak Balok. And now, moving on to another story making headlines today, is that 6 people were reported killed, many others injured as a result of clashes between members of the Islamic Movement in Nigeria, IMN, and the police that tried to prevent holding the peaceful Ashura mourning procession.
But the Nigerian police force has denied all the allegations. Mohammed Al-Amin reports from Nigeria.
Shiite Islamic members defied police ban and stormed the streets of major cities in Nigeria to carry out its traditional Ashura mourning procession. The procession began at 7 a.m. in the Nigerian capital Abuja and was hurriedly concluded to avoid confrontation with the security operatives. The group claimed some of the procession's marches were calmed down by the security forces. Saleh Osman is one of the group's leaders in northeastern Nigeria.
We are practicing our fundamental human rights. We have even finished our procession. We have closed it with our dua and we have done everything. Now they came and started firing at us. The police and the army came firing tear gas and live bullets. As of now, we are sure that they have 2 people are dead and 7 are wounded.
But the Nigerian police force denied the allegation, noting that the outlawed Islamic Movement in Nigeria, IMN, was making up stories to win public sympathy. But Abbas Muhammad, a Red Cross official in Gombe, northeastern Nigeria, confirmed the death of one IMN member as a result of a clash during the procession, which also left 3 police officers injured.
The Nigerian police were trying to disperse the crowd. That leads to shooting from the Nigerian police, and after the shooting or the chaos, we have 3 casualties, 2 from the Shiite members, 1 is dead, confirmed at the specialist hospital, while 2 are receiving treatment. From the police side, we have 2 casualties.
Mohammed Al-Amin there with that report. And taking you back to our top story is that Cameroonian President Paul Biya is to address the nation any time from now in a very rare speech. And there are a lot of expectations on our Facebook page, DW
Certainly,
Africa.
Certainly, Christian Gu says that each state should be able to handle their affairs in Cameroon goes back to, or that it should go back to the 2-state federation.
Thanks so much for that comment. And we have this one from Cyril Archer who says we want the total independence of Southern Cameroon.
And Don Akam says that Franks wrote up the speech for Paul Biya to address. He is a robot. That is simply his point of view. And we thank you for your reactions.
A lot of comments coming in.
Certainly, especially on our Facebook page.
And Hamza or Ibrahim Duju says the Southern Cameroonians need our total independence. All of them are talking about independence.
Listening to You are listening to Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. Stay with us for more stories across Africa and beyond. I am Mimi Mefu.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Thank you to all of you live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. I can see Dam Dam there, Total Separation. He's talking about Cameroon, the southern end. What Cameroon?
Yeah, that is separation. The situation in Cameroon at this point in time is very, very fragile. The reason why today's speech of the president is very, very primordial. We are expecting to hear what the head of state is going to say. Now we would be taking you in the next 15 minutes to Uganda. Feminists in the country say that the time to break cultural barriers and defend their rights is now.
Women have been victim for so long of this sexist culture. You know, when you have been so oppressed and sometimes you think oppression is okay. Personally, I really don't entertain them.
But before heading to Uganda, let's first head to West Africa, and to be precise, Burkina Faso, where the government admits its country is still a hotbed for terror attacks despite efforts to tackle the country's worsening security situation.
Now, reacting to the recent separate bomb blast in northern part of the country, which left close to 30 people dead, Foreign Affairs and Cooperation Minister of Burkina Faso, Alpha Barry, says that the international community should complement government's efforts in the fight.
Au minimum, c'est un cinquième des budgets qui sont consacrés donc aux questions de défense et de sécurité.
A fifth of the budget is centered on defense and security in Burkina Faso. But no country can single-handedly counter terrorism. There is need for assistance and solidarity from neighboring countries, especially those out of the G5 Sahel region. Apart from the agreement reached in Brussels to protect the G5 Sahel member states in 2018, we also need support from the international partners.
Il faut un partenariat international, c'est-à-dire un engagement beaucoup plus important de la part de la communauté internationale à nos côtés.
Alpha Barry there, Foreign Affairs Minister of Burkina Faso.
And earlier today, I spoke with DW's Bram Postumus in Burkina Faso. He begins by telling us why fighting terrorism has been a major challenge for Burkina Faso.
There is a problem with the security forces. If you enter Burkina Faso, you will have your passport checked by the army, the gendarmerie, and the police. And there doesn't seem to be a great deal of coordination among these various forces. The other problem is that the army is in full reform. We've got a country that is fighting an asymmetrical war against an insurgency or against self-declared jihadists with an army that is clearly not up to the task.
Can you tell us the impact of the fragile security situation on the people of Burkina Faso?
It's absolutely terrible. We're now looking at least 150,000, and some reports even mention 200,000 internally displaced persons. This has never happened before in Burkina Faso. We've got whole areas in the north and in the east of the country that are unsafe, and people have moved to places they consider safe, principally Ouagadougou, the capital.
We understand this coming Saturday, heads of West African states will be meeting in Ouagadougou to discuss on how to counter terrorism in the region. What are the expectations?
Well, whatever expectations there are, they must be very low. We've had the G5, because this is within the framework of the G5. The five countries, you know, Chad, Burkina Faso, Niger, Mali, and Mauritania, that have got together and put together a force called the G5 Sahel, which is supposed to be fighting crime, cross-border crime, and jihadism. The problem is that the G5 is very, very badly underfunded and has got very, very difficult coordination problems, which is logical because you're talking about five different armies from five different countries with five different military cultures. So it's very difficult to make them coordinate. And so the expectations, whatever is being discussed in Ouagadougou, will fall flat as long as these funding issues are not solved and as long as the coordination issues are not solved.
Earlier, the Minister of Foreign Affairs in Burkina Faso was saying that there is the need for the international community to intervene and support the country and other members of the G5 Sahel to fight against terrorism. Do you think that this can produce results?
What I understand from speaking with Burkinabe is that they tell us, listen, these foreign troops on our soil have served to attract terrorists rather than repel them. The only area in which you can possibly see a contribution is targeted intelligence. This is where international assistance could possibly be useful. But more troops on the ground, only look across the border in Mali and see where that's got us in a very bad situation as well.
That is Bram Posthumous speaking from Burkina Faso. Earlier, we asked you what you think about the situation in Burkina Faso. Don Akam says that former President Blaise Compaoré is behind the instability of Burkina Faso. He must be brought back to the country to be tried and sent to jail.
Another one from Frederick Mba. He says France has discovered resources in Burkina Faso and is strategizing to extract. Shame on them. Thanks for all your comments. We really appreciate your interaction on the program.
Africa on the move.
We told you earlier that Rwandan female activists are warning that the country is not making the desired progress regarding women activists, even though the country remains one of the top performers in terms of gender equality, with more women in positions of leadership.
Male dominance in Rwanda is very prevalent and is culturally entrenched, since society is traditionally patriarchal and sexism in many ways and still considered normal. Alex Ngaramba has more.
Sylvine Sanga, 39 years of age, is a leading Rwandan feminist who took the lead in a fight against sexist adverts made by a local beer brewery. One of the jokes appearing on the bottles of Skol beer says, quote, "When can a woman make you a millionaire?" The answer, when you are a billionaire. And your faithfulness each day. In her office at Kigali Convention Center, Nsanga listens to soft music but takes steady stands against injustices meted out to women in society.
Women have been victims for so long of this sexist culture. We have entertained it and we have seen it normal. You know, when you have been so oppressed and sometimes you think oppression is okay. So that some feminists, like personally, I really don't entertain them.
Nsanga says that government has put in place sound policies to protect women and end marginalization, but both culture and religion still hinder those efforts.
So culture is very, very strong in Rwanda at the point, despite the policies which are there, you have to be perceived as a good woman in the society, as a good woman everywhere you are. And it makes women keeping quiet of different abuses which are going on.
Nsanga, in her office, she is preparing tea for her colleagues. She says they have started to understand the importance of treating women with respect, and some have boycotted Skol products in a show of solidarity.
I'm lucky that the men around me and the men whom I know loves Skol that really stopped drinking it, because they couldn't just associate. It was too much. Yes, and this shows you now the role of gender equality in Rwanda.
However, according to William Onwari, a male activist in Rwanda, the whole concept of feminism is being exaggerated, and in the long term, men will find themselves the victims of this new wave.
Some women, some feminists, would undermine men so to feel happy, to feel that they have already been at the same level. Given that they say that, it has been like 400 years, 500 years that the men were undermining women. Now it's their time, they're around. These feminists nowadays want everything changed, want men kneel before them.
Rwanda is one of the few African nations to achieve gender parity in the cabinet, and over 60% of its legislators are women.
Alex Garamba there with that report from Rwanda.
And now we take our listeners a little bit out of the African continent. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has succeeded in his plan to suspend the country's parliament for 5 weeks amidst protest from MPs.
Parties will hold their annual conferences, but without debates, votes or committee scrutiny sessions until October 14th, which will be 2 weeks to UK's departure from the European Union.
Focus Europe.
Now, in the UK, expectations are very, very high as Johnson would have to seek an extension of Britain's membership in the European Council meeting next month. That's going to be on the 17th of October 2019. DW's Max Hoffman now tells us what happens next remains uncertain.
We don't know, because something like this has never happened before. Basically, the Parliament being suspended against his will for such a long time during such a crucial time. The only person that can really act in this situation right now is the Prime Minister himself, Boris Johnson. But his options are also limited, meaning that if he really wants to pursue his goal to have a no-deal Brexit on the 31st of October, then he might have to break the law. As you know, the House of Commons, so the UK Parliament, enacted a law that forbids Boris Johnson to have a no-deal Brexit and actually forces him to ask for an extension of the Brexit deadline. But he has repeatedly said he'd rather be dead in a ditch than do that. So we assume that in the Prime Minister's office, they're looking for ways around this law.
So what does this decision to prorogue the parliament mean for the much-anticipated Brexit deal?
The Brexit deal, which is the withdrawal agreement, so some people also call it the divorce deal between the European Union and the United Kingdom, it's still there. It's still on the table, meaning that the EU says we negotiated for years, and this is the only deal on the table. We won't accept any changing of this withdrawal agreement. On the other hand, you have Great Britain and Boris Johnson, especially, who says we will need to change this withdrawal agreement if we can get a deal, especially he wants the so-called backstop out of there. Now, the backstop is the insurance policy to avoid a hard border between Northern Ireland, which is part of the United Kingdom, and the Republic of Ireland, which is part of the European Union. EU says, won't do it. Boris Johnson said, we're working on alternatives. EU says, we've never seen these alternatives. So although this withdrawal agreement still exists, it's very unlikely that'll be agreed by the UK.
Another alternative is a possible general election before October 31st. What are the chances for the UK seeing a general election before this period?
That seems very unlikely, to tell you the truth. It's off the table, actually, 99%, because the House of Commons, in one of its last actions on Monday night, rejected general or snap elections before the 31st of October. So you need the House of Commons to decide this, to decide new elections. And as you know, they're going to be off the grid now for a couple of weeks. So if there are snap elections, they will happen most likely after the 31st of October. So really the question right now is, will Boris Johnson ask for the extension as normally he is required to do? And then will the EU agree to that, or will he not do it and basically break the law?
That is Max Hoffman speaking about the uncertain situation in the United Kingdom.
And just reminding you of some of our top stories is that Rwanda has agreed to take hundreds of African refugees trapped in Libyan detention centers. And the first group of 500 refugees will be evacuated in coming weeks under the new transit mechanism, partly funded by the European Union. And we are still receiving your comments.
And of course, we ask you on Facebook, out of 54 countries in the African continent, why only Rwanda? Anna Acheng says that a lot of money. Rwanda is also a prisoner. Dean, that's quite funny there.
Yeah, yes, indeed. And Susan Noor says African countries should take African refugees, and this is a good gesture by Rwanda.
And Adam Amit is praising Paul Kagame. According to him, he is a master himself, but other African leaders are simply puppets to European leaders.
Thanks so much for those comments. Huntington Kisima says, here in Uganda, we have them even in the State House. Rwanda just started today.
And Timo says, this is a setup. We have a lot of comments coming in, but we also have this story in South Africa, xenophobia that has not left any within the continent, indifferent hundreds of foreigners that are fleeing the country as attacks on locals or by locals show no sign of ending. We equally had a lot of reactions, Jane.
One is from Patrick Muyani Mawa, who says nothing is going to change, but at least they will now realize who the main cause of their endless problem is. For the moment, they are misguided.
Annabeth Fwamba says that I left South Africa the first time xenophobic violence started. He adds that I'm back home living safe. There is no better place than home, home sweet home. You still make it even at home.
Thanks so much for your time. My name is Jane Nyinge.
And I am Mimi Mifo.
Made for Minds.